From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I am from Livermore.
I'm from East Oakland.
Oakland, near Lake Merritt.
Alameda, California.
I'm in the Excelsior neighborhood.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I grew up in Sonoma County.
Coming up, we find out why the new span of the Bay Bridge costs so much.
The longer it takes to build something, the much more expensive it becomes.
Then 400 amateur singers take on Mozart.
I really thoroughly understand now that I do not know German.
And a young boy comes to terms with a challenging disorder.
I was up against a brick wall, and I had a plastic fork. And I was trying to chip away at it.
The seemingly impossible becomes possible today on Cross Currents. Just a few months ago, the Bay Bridge opening was supposed to sound like this. Instead of fireworks, it sounded like this.
So together.
Yesterday, there was a traditional chain-cutting ceremony, but no $5.5 million party. That was scrapped because officials made the decision to go ahead with the Labor Day opening just 2 weeks ago, and there wasn't enough time to prepare. But a lot of people were fine with that, saying the party would have just been a waste of money on a project that had already spiraled out of control. And here's why. In 1996, the California Department of Transportation said a new eastern span of the bridge would be done by 2003 to the tune of $1.5 billion. But by the time everything was finished, the bridge that opened last night actually cost close to $6.5 billion. So what happened? KALW's Isabel Angel shows us the surprising reasons we got a bill five times higher than we originally signed up for.
There's a hell of an earthquake, and we've got windows and everything that's falling out. We've got a hell of a dust cloud.
This is the sound of the beginning of the new Bay Bridge. It's 1989, and a huge earthquake just shook the Bay Area. A lot of things have collapsed, including a section of the bridge's eastern span.
The upper deck collapsed into lower deck.
From westbound into eastbound, east of TI.
They talked about renovating the existing bridge, and that was going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
William Ibbs teaches construction management at UC Berkeley. He's also an engineer and has worked as a consultant on huge infrastructure projects around the world. He's studied the Bay Bridge, and he's going to help tell the story of its journey from a pretty big infrastructure project to an enormous one.
The thing that I believe your listeners should pay most attention to is the fact that the longer it takes to build something, the much more expensive it becomes.
So, after the 89 quake, Caltrans rebuilds the collapsed span in a month. But it's a short-term fix. Over the next few years, they develop a plan to retrofit all the state's major bridges, including the Eastern Span. By now, it's 1994.
Good evening. This area is still trying to recover tonight from a major earthquake that struck early this morning in the San Fernando Valley in Northridge, which is about 10
another devastating quake, this time in Los Angeles. Engineers take another look at the Bay Bridge.
About 1995, they decided that it would be more prudent to rebuild or to build a new structure rather than try and renovate the existing structure.
In 1997, the state legislature passes a bill funding that replacement. They estimate the new span will cost $1.3 billion. The proposal is for a simple skyway, like the San Mateo Bridge.
A plain vanilla type of structure, what was called the viaduct, or what some of our elected leaders disparagingly refer to as a freeway on stilts.
This does not go over well. Politicians pan it, and East Bay residents think they deserve something better.
People decided that they wanted some iconic type of structure on the East Bay to kind of go with the Golden Gate Bridge.
There is an option for a prettier bridge, if the region raises tolls and picks up the tab on the difference. Later that year, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, or MTC, decides to go for it. They scrap the original plan and announce they'll choose a new, more aesthetically pleasing design. Now, things get more complicated. The mayors of Oakland and San Francisco at the time both have things they want. In Oakland,
Mayor Jerry Brown wanted to invite world-famous architects from around the world to compete on their ideas for what a iconic structure would look like.
And in San Francisco,
San Francisco's Mayor Brown wanted the bridge to come in a certain direction so that there could have been an entertainment center complete with a casino built on Yerba Buena Island.
The middle of the bay is the domain of the U.S. Navy and Coast Guard, and they also have priorities.
Admiral Nimitz of World War II fame actually had a house on Yerba Buena Island that now has historic designation. So from an engineering point of view, an ideal alignment would have been to come in where that house is, but the Navy didn't want to lose that historic structure.
All in all,
we really lost about 2 years of construction time because of the wrangling over the alignment and the touchdown on the Yerba Buena Island.
And remember,
all the inspectors, all the bookkeepers, all the engineers that you need to keep around for this project get paid on a day-by-day basis. So if you extend the project by 30 days, 60 days, 180 days, you're adding up the costs. The longer it takes to build something, the much more expensive it becomes.
But okay, first stage of wrangling over. It's 1998. MTC chooses a design for the bridge, the self-anchored suspension. It's set to be the longest span of its kind in the world, with a 525-foot tower, a signature span. Caltrans estimates that adding this span will cost an extra $141 million, bringing the total cost to about $1.5 billion. Tolls go up a dollar to cover the extra costs. The bridge is supposed to be done by 2004. But fast forward a few years to 2001, and the construction still hasn't started. And somehow, the cost has doubled to $2.6 billion. Caltrans tells the legislature the bridge won't be done until 2007. I'm going to say this again. Before construction even started, the cost of the replacement span doubled. How does that happen?
When you go to build something for the first time, you don't have a track record for estimating. You don't have a good reference point for estimating the cost of this one-of-a-kind event. So one legitimate explanation is that people just thought they could do the project faster and cheaper, this one-of-a-kind structure faster and cheaper than they really could.
There's a name for this. It's called optimism bias. And it affects big projects the world over, again and again and again.
The more they dug into it, the more they realized there were a lot of complications.
Complications like bickering politicians, nationwide increases in construction costs.
And the economy was very hot at that time, and contractors had a lot of opportunities to bid on other projects.
Long story short, the legislature passes a second funding bill on September 14th, 2001. 9/11 has a big impact on the cost of the bridge.
The insurance industry was on the hook to pay for the damages associated with the World Trade Center.
So they start going around and identifying other high-profile projects.
The Bay Bridge is a magnet for that type of attack. As a consequence, the insurance companies increased their rates to cover what they thought were the increased risks associated with building a signature span like this.
The extra insurance costs, plus the time that comes with a new design, tax another $250 million onto the project. 2004. There have been more delays. Steel prices have shot up almost 150%, and a booming economy has pushed construction costs even higher. In just 2 years, the cost of the bridge has doubled again to $5.6 billion. The single biggest culprit for the jump is the signature span. Caltrans gets just one bid on the project, a $1.4 billion estimate. That's almost $800 million more than the 2001 estimate of the span's cost. So they have to go back to the legislature and ask for more money. But by now, Arnold Schwarzenegger is governor, and he calls the whole design into question. He says the signature span is just too expensive. Remember, the bridge was supposed to cost just over $1 billion and be finished in 2004. Instead, it's 5 times that price, and construction has barely started. So instead of moving forward, the legislature sends Caltrans back to the drawing board. They go back to reviewing alternate designs, including that original simple skyway. But the same problems come right back. Local politicians do not want a viaduct bridge. Remember the freeway on stilts? Finally, in the summer of 2005, they reach a compromise. Signature span stays, regional bridge tolls go up another dollar to pay for it. New cost estimate, $6.3 billion. Finally, construction starts on the signature span. It seems so real, the Golden State Warriors basketball team even incorporates it into their new logo.
A silhouette of the yet-to-be-completed eastern span of the Bay Bridge is the focal point of the design and a direct spinoff of the city logo, one of the most popular emblems in the history of professional sports.
The bridge starts to take shape and become a part of the region's skyline. And over the next 7 years, the cost estimate increases just $100 million. That's not to say there aren't problems.
A big problem for the new eastern span of the Bay Bridge. Seismic safety bolts that are already installed have turned out to be faulty.
But today, the bridge is open. And for the record, Ib says he has total faith in its safety. So does the Federal Highway Administration and other independent engineering firms. And they all agree the old bridge was very unsafe. The bridge's story isn't over. The bolts need their permanent fix, and the project isn't technically over until the last bit of foundation from the old bridge has been carted away. So while $6.4 billion is the total projected cost, it's possible the price tag could still rise. Which brings up the last and perhaps most important question. Who paid for all this? And the answer is, for the most part, you. By the time we're done paying off the bridge, Bay Area drivers will have paid close to 70% of the total cost, nearly $4.5 billion. The new bridge is supposed to last 150 years. So I'll let you know in 2163 if it was all worth it. For Cross Currents, I'm Isabel Angel.
So, what was it like for you to drive over the new bridge for the first time? And do you like the fancy new design? Let us know on our Facebook page. We are KALW. Listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. You just heard how even experts in their field can take way longer than expected to do their work. Well, in our next story, we'll hear about the opposite, how hundreds of amateurs manage to do something that should take weeks in just a matter of hours. Twice a year, the San Francisco Symphony hosts workshops called Sing Out Davies as part of the Symphony's Community of Music Makers program. For one evening, singers from around the Bay come together to make music as one. KALW's Alyssa Kapnick stood among them for a recent workshop and brought back their impressions of what it's like to be an ordinary person in such an extraordinary experience.
My name is Susie Orr. I'm an alto.
I'm Linda Holbrook, and I sing alto. I can sight read.
My name is David Silverman, and I haven't sang since high school, so I thought, yeah, why not?
So what do you anticipate it'll feel like to be in this group?
A little bit of the anticipation that I want to cry. A little sentimental.
It feels good. It feels exciting. I can't wait to get started.
Excuse me. Come on through this door.
Yeah. Well, we're entering the upper orchestra in Davies Hall, and we're looking around. We're thinking, I'm going to be somewhere up there on stage. I've found that singing in a big chorus is very inspiring. And there's a great kind of power that comes from 400 voices.
I'm Ragnar Berlin, chorus director with the San Francisco Symphony Chorus. So we gather together at 6:30. I have a warm-up, try to get everybody on the same page.
Less. I sing on my speaking voice and it's a little bit narrow.
Go too much into it, a little bit hooty like this. We don't want that either, but maybe halfway in. That's how you should walk around and talk every day.
After about half an hour, we split up into sectionals. And we have assistant conductors that help me work with each section.
So we change that. Eyes for wonder. Straight on and one, two.
Eyes for wonder.
And don't be afraid to bring out those consonants. Very important. Can I hear you speak this? Ready? And.
During that hour, it's very much about learning the music solidly, but also to start polishing and start finding the phrasing, shaping of the music.
In the sing in the dark is called the world.
Yes, exactly.
So, what's going on right now?
So we just broke up from sectionals, which I really thoroughly understand now that I do not know German. It's beautiful, though. Everyone's very supportive.
So what's happened since we last spoke?
Well, we started singing together and getting the kinks out so that we all sound like one voice, but we're not one voice. That's the beauty of choral work. But if we pronounce things the same way and we accent the notes the correct way, the way they didn't want us to, it sounds like one voice, so it's fabulous.
We're spitting out a lot of German in the proper time, or trying to, with the proper notes at the same time, which is, for some of us, kind of challenging.
And then we all meet again on stage, and we have about 1 hour to get everything together, and that's when I push very hard all the musical aspects of phrasing, dynamics, expression, diction.
Could you do a little bit more? Say again. Very. Very. Straight on. Two.
For the last 10 minutes, we have a little mini performance. We sing through the pieces, and usually there will be a little bit of an audience out there, relatives and friends up in the balconies, and we sing to them, and that's it.
Behind the music started to come through the words, as opposed to just singing the words.
You know, it did really inspire me to go out and sing more. It really woke something in me that was been sleeping for a while.
I just felt like my heart and my soul were open, and the music was flowing out and at the same time kind of flowing in. The group is way better than the individual. The group is what makes it.
That piece was produced by KALW's Alyssa Kapnick. The Community of Music Makers program is opening their doors for another workshop this December. Registration opens mid-September. You can find more information about Sing Out Davies on our website, kalw.org. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. 13-year-old Jonah Cohen is dyslexic. The learning disability plays a big role in Jonah's life, from impacting his success as a student to influencing which kids he considers friends. Jonah and his mom, Nancy Kaufman Cohen, stopped by the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco to record a conversation about one of his earliest memories. It's the day his parents told him he would have to change schools because of his dyslexia.
It was a Saturday, and it was sunny outside, and we were eating French toast. And you and Dada told me, and I was very sad and shocked, and I laid down face down on the bench and just lay there.
So you and I have had this conversation sometimes about me trying to ask you, like, what does it look like to you when you look at a book? What does it look like?
Especially when I'm tired, it's an effort. I kind of feel like I'm telling them, stay on the page, stay where you are, to the words. And it's a concerted effort. And I really think that's the only difference with my reading. It's a concerted effort not to read, but to get the words to stay in place. And once they stay in place, I'm fine.
If you could just make a choice or have like a magic pill or a magic wand that, you know, you could wake up tomorrow and your dyslexia would be gone, would you go for it?
That's something I've thought about a lot. And one of my favorite things to do in life is write, but that's the absolute hardest thing with my dyslexia. But considering how much it has made me me, and how much it has shaped my life experience, I didn't wish it gone. It would be one thing to be born without it, but to wake up tomorrow and have it gone, that wouldn't be so good.
What's helped you the most with learning everything that you've needed to learn?
Well, as we've been discussing this, I remembered a metaphor I wrote in my fifth grade gratitude journal.
Oh, yeah?
I was up against a brick wall, and I had a plastic fork, and I was trying to chip away at it. But, like, when people like you or anyone else who's helped me come along, it's like, you toss a bunch of dynamite and the wall just goes away.
That's a great image. That's great. That's great.
And over the years, some of that responsibility has shifted to me. And I've gotten a bit better tool than a plastic fork now. But so much of it has been your help.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. That's great. That's great.
I hardly think it's because of it, but I notice more and more that everyone has an exia, and it's just the way in our logical, scientific, methodical society of us saying that everyone's brain is different.
That was Jonah Cohen speaking with his mother, Nancy Kaufman Cohen, in the StoryCorps booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. That story was produced by KALW's Melanie Young. To find out how to share your story with StoryCorps, visit kalw.org. And that's all for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Holly J. McDee, Daniel Moore, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio.
Honey, now I'm all dog and fooling around with you.
And speaking of our listeners, we'd really like your input for a show we have coming up about dogs in San Francisco. It's rumored that they outnumber kids in the city. So this has us wondering, what effect can so many dogs have on our city? Tell us how you think dog ownership is changing San Francisco. Just leave us a message on our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And stay tuned for our upcoming dog show.
Dog show!
This is Bob Dylan. No, he's not part of the Bay Area local music scene, but a project called Highway 61 Revisited is. The ambitious program features Beth Lissick, Whisker Man, Lily Taylor, Quinn DeVoe, and about 50 other Bay Area performers playing songs from Dylan's Highway 61 album. There are three performances, this Thursday and Friday at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, then Sunday afternoon at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. All the details are at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Who sits at the head of the Chamber of Commerce? Mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in the kitchen where the tombstone blues.